Chapter 6 That Wears a Crown. Byron Farrell waited uneasily in one of the outer buildings on the palace grounds. For the first time in his life, he experienced the deflating sensation of being a provincial. Widomo's Hall, where he had grown up, had been beautiful in his eyes, and now his memory endowed it with merely barbaric glitter. Its curved lines, its filigree work, its curiously wrought turrets, its elaborate false windows. He winced at the thought of them. But this was different. The palace grounds of Rhodia were no mere lump of ostentation built by the petty lords of a cattle kingdom, nor were they the childlike expression of a fading and dying world. They were the culmination, in stone, of the Henriad dynasty. The buildings were strong and quiet. Their lines were straight and vertical, lengthening toward the center of each structure, yet avoiding anything as effeminate as a spire effect. They held a bluntness about them, yet lifted into a climax that affected the onlooker without revealing their method of doing so at a casual glance. They were reserved, self-contained, proud. And as each building was, so was the group as a whole, the huge palace central becoming a crescendo. One by one, even the few artificialities remaining in the masculine Rhodian style had dropped away. The very false windows, so valued as decoration and so useless in a building of artificial light and ventilation, were done away with, and that somehow without loss. It was only line and plane, a geometrical abstraction that led the eye upward to the sky. The Turanian major stopped briefly at his side as he left the inner room. "You will be received now," he said. Byron nodded, and after a while, a larger man in a uniform of scarlet and tan clicked heels before him. It struck Byron with sudden force that those who had the real power did not need the outward show and could be satisfied with slate blue. He recalled the garish formality of a rancher's life and bit his lip at the thought of its futility. "Byron Mullane?" asked the Rhodian guard. And Byron rose to follow. There was a little, gleaming monorail carriage that was suspended delicately by diamagnetic forces upon a single ruddy shaft of metal. Byron had never seen one before. He paused before entering. The little carriage, big enough for 5 or 6 at the most, swayed with the wind, a graceful teardrop returning the gleam of Rhodia's splendid sun. The single rail was slender, scarcely more than a cable, and ran the length of the carriage's underside without touching. Byron bent and saw blue sky all the length between them. For a moment, as he watched, a lifting gust of wind raised it, so that it hovered a full inch above the rail, as though impatient for flight and tearing at the invisible force field that held it. Then it fluttered back to the rail, closer and still closer, but never touching. "Get in," said the guard behind him impatiently, and Byron climbed 2 steps into the carriage. The steps remained long enough for the guard to follow, then lifted quietly and smoothly into place, forming no break in the carriage's even exterior. Byron became aware that the outer opacity of the carriage was an illusion. Once within, he found himself sitting in a transparent bubble. At the motion of a small control, the carriage lifted upward. It climbed the heights easily, buffeting the atmosphere which whistled past. For one moment, Byron caught the panorama of the palace grounds from the apex of the arc. The structures became a gorgeous whole. Could they have been originally conceived other than as an air view, laced by the shining copper threads along 1 or 2 of which the graceful carriage bubbles skimmed? He felt himself pressed forward, and the carriage came to a dancing halt. The entire run had lasted less than 2 minutes. A door stood open before him. He entered it, and it closed behind him. There was no one in the room, which was small and bare. For the moment, no one was pushing him, but he felt no comfort because of it. He was under no illusions. Ever since that damn night, others had forced his moves. Jaunty had placed him on the ship. The Turanian commissioner had placed him there. And each move had increased the measure of his desperation. It was obvious to Byron that the Turanian had not been fooled. It had been too easy to get away from him. The commissioner might have called the terrestrial consul. He might have hyperwaved Earth or taken his retinal patterns. These things were routine. They could not have been omitted accidentally. He remembered Jaunty's analysis of affairs. Some of it might be valid. The Tirani would not kill him outright to create another martyr. But Henrik was their puppet, and he was as capable as they of ordering an execution. And then he would have been killed by one of his own, and the Tirani would merely be disdainful onlookers. Byron clenched his fists tightly. He was tall and strong, but he was unarmed. The men who would come for him would have blasters and neuronic whips. He found himself backing against the wall. He whirled quickly at the small sound of the opening door to his left. The man who entered was armed and uniformed, but there was a girl with him. He relaxed a bit. It was only a girl with him. At another time, he might have observed the girl closely, since she was worth observation and approval. But at the moment, she was only a girl. They approached together, stopping some 6 feet away. He kept his eye on the guard's blaster. The girl said to the guard, "I'll speak to him first, Lieutenant." There was a little vertical line between her eyes as she turned to him. She said, "Are you the man who has this story of an assassination plot against the director?" Byron said, "I was told I would see the director." "That is impossible. If you have anything to say, say it to me. If your information is truthful and useful, you will be well treated." "May I ask you who you are? How do I know you are authorized to speak for the director?" The girl seemed annoyed. "I am his daughter. Please answer my questions. Are you from outside the system?" "I am from Earth." Byron paused, then added, "Your Grace." The addition pleased her. "Where is that?"
"It is a small planet of the Sirian sector, Your Grace."
"And what is your name?"
"Byron Mullane, Your Grace."
She stared at him thoughtfully. "From Earth? Can you pilot a spaceship?"
Byron almost smiled.
She was testing him. She knew very well that space navigation was one of the forbidden sciences in the Tirani-controlled worlds. He said, "Yes, Your Grace." He could prove that when the performance test came, if they let him live that long. Space navigation was not a forbidden science on Earth, and in 4 years one could learn much. She said, "Very well. And your story?" He made his decision suddenly. To the guard alone he would not have dared, but this was a girl, and if she were not lying, if she really were the director's daughter, she might be a persuasive factor on his behalf. He said, "There is no assassination plot, Your Grace." The girl was startled. She turned impatiently to her companion. "Would you take over, Lieutenant? Get the truth out of him." Byron took a step forward and met the cold thrust of the guard's blaster. He said urgently, "Wait, Your Grace, listen to me. It was the only way to see the director. Don't you understand?" He raised his voice and sent it after her retreating form. "Will you tell His Excellency at least that I am Byron Farrell and I claim my sanctuary right?" It was a feeble straw at which to clutch. The old feudal customs had been losing their force with the generations even before the Tirani came. Now they were archaisms. But there was nothing else, nothing. She turned, and her eyebrows were arched. "Are you claiming now to be one of the aristocratic order? A moment ago you said your name was Mullane." A new voice sounded unexpectedly.
So it was, but it is the second name which is correct. You are Byron Farrell indeed, my good sir. Of course you are. The resemblance is unmistakable."
A small, smiling man stood in the doorway. His eyes, widely spaced and brilliant, were taking in all of Byron with an amused sharpness. He cocked his narrow face upward at Byron's height and said to the girl,
"Don't you recognize him too, Artemisia?"
Artemisia hurried to him, her voice troubled. "Uncle Gil, what are you doing here?"
"Taking care of my interests, Artemisia. Remember that if there were an assassination, I would be the closest of the Henriads to the possible succession."
Gilbert Oth Henriad winked elaborately, then added, "Oh, get the lieutenant out of here. There isn't any danger." She ignored that and said, "Have you been tapping the communicator again?"
"But yes. Would you deprive me of an amusement? It is pleasant to eavesdrop on them.
Not if they catch you."
"The dangerous part of the game, my dear, the amusing part. After all, the Tirani do not hesitate to tap the palace. We can't do much without their knowing. We'll turn about, you know. Aren't you going to introduce me?
No, I'm not, she said shortly. This is none of your business. Then I'll introduce you. When I heard his name, I stopped listening and came in. He moved past Artemisia, stepped up to Byron, inspected him with an impersonal smile, and said, "This is Byron Farrell." "I have said so myself," said Byron. More than half his attention was upon the lieutenant, who still held his blaster in firing position.
"But you have not added that you are the son of the rancher of Widemos."
"I would have, but for your interruption. In any case, you've got the story now. Obviously, I had to get away from the Tirani, and that without giving them my real name." Byron waited. This was it, he felt. If the next move was not an immediate arrest, there was still a trifling chance. Artemisia said, "I see. This is a matter for the director."
"You are sure there is no plot of any sort, then?"
"None, Your Grace."
"Good.
Uncle Gil, will you remain with Mr. Farrell? Lieutenant, will you come with me?" Byron felt weak. He would have liked to sit down, but no suggestion to that effect was made by Gilbert, who still inspected him with an almost clinical interest.
"The rancher's son. Amusing."
Byron brought his attention downward. He was tired of cautious monosyllables and careful phrases. He said abruptly, "Yes, the rancher's son. It is a congenital situation. Can I help you in any other way?" Gilbert showed no offense. His thin face merely creased further as his smile widened. He said,
"You might satisfy my curiosity. You really came for sanctuary? Here?"
"I'd rather discuss that with the director, sir."
"Oh, get off it, young man. You'll find that very little business can be done with the director. Why do you suppose you had to deal with his daughter just now?"
"That's an amusing thought, if you'll consider it."
"Do you find everything amusing?"
"Why not? As an attitude toward life, it's an amusing one.
It's the only adjective that will fit. Observe the universe, young man. If you can't force amusement out of it, you might as well cut your throat, since there's damned little good in it. I haven't introduced myself, by the way. I'm the director's cousin."
Byron said coldly, "Congratulations." Gilbert shrugged.
"You're right. It's not impressive, and I'm likely to remain just that indefinitely, since there is no assassination to be expected after all."
"Unless you whip one up for yourself."
"My dear sir, your sense of humor.
You'll have to get used to the fact that nobody takes me seriously. My remark was only an expression of cynicism. You don't suppose the directorship is worth anything these days, do you? Surely you cannot believe that Henrik was always like this.
He was never a great brain, but with every year, he becomes more impossible."
"I forget. Oh, you haven't seen him yet, but you will.
I hear him coming. When he speaks, do you remember that he is the ruler of the largest of the transnebular kingdoms? It will be an amusing thought."
Henrik bore his dignity with the ease of experience. He acknowledged Byron's painstakingly ceremonious bow with the proper degree of condescension. He said, with a trace of abruptness,
"And your business with us, sir?"
Artemisia was standing at her father's side, and Byron noticed, with some surprise, that she was quite pretty. He said, "Your Excellency, I have come on behalf of my father's good name. You must know his execution was unjust." Henrik looked away.
"I knew your father. Slightly. He was in Rhodia once or twice."
He paused, and his voice quavered a bit.
"You are very like him. Very. But he was tried, you know. At least, I imagine he was. And according to law.
Really, I don't know the details."
"Exactly, Your Excellency. But I would like to learn those details. I am sure that my father was no traitor."
Henrik broke in hurriedly.
"As his son, of course, it is understandable you should defend your father. But really, it is difficult to discuss such matters of state now. Highly irregular, in fact.
Why don't you see Aratap?"
"I do not know him, Excellency."
"Aratap, the commissioner, the Tyranian commissioner."
"I have seen him, and he sent me here. Surely you understand that I dare not let the Tirani—" But Henrik had grown stiff. His hand had wandered to his lips as though to keep them from trembling, and his words were consequently muffled.
Eratap sent you here, you say?
I found it necessary to tell him.
Don't repeat what you told him.
I know, said Henry. I can do nothing for you, rancher.
Mr. Farrell.
It is not in my jurisdiction alone. The executive council.
Stop pulling at me, Arta. How can I pay attention to matters when you distract me?
Must be consulted.
Gilbert, will you see that Mr. Farrell is taken care of? I will see what can be done. Yes, yes, I will consult the executive council. The forms of law, you know. Very important. Very important.
He turned on his heel, mumbling. Artemisia lingered for a moment and touched Byron's sleeve.
A moment. Was it true, your statement, that you could pilot a spaceship?
Quite true, said Byron. He smiled at her, and after a moment's hesitation, she dimpled briefly in return.
Gilbert, she said, I want to speak to you later.
She hurried off. Byron looked after her till Gilbert tweaked at his sleeve.
I presume you are hungry, perhaps thirsty. Would you like a wash? Asked Gilbert. The ordinary amenities of life continue, I take it.
Thank you, yes, said Byron. The tension had almost entirely washed out of him. For a moment he was relaxed and felt wonderful.
She was pretty.
Very pretty. But Henrik was not relaxed. In his own chambers, his thoughts whirled at a feverish pace. Try as he might, he could not wriggle out of the inevitable conclusion. It was a trap. Eratap had sent him, and it was a trap. He buried his head in his hands to quiet and deaden the pounding. And then he knew what he had to do.